I remember laying on the surgical prep gurney, knowing what was going to come next and being completely afraid. Several years ago, I broke my right middle finger. It got caught in Brady's shirt, and as I was holding onto his shirt, and then as he walked away, it yanked my finger, and my bone caused my finger to go at a 45-degree angle. Let me just say it's an unfortunate finger to break. And I didn't just break it, I broke it in a way that it required surgery to fix it. My doctor told me that in order for him to correct it, he was going to need to put several screws into the bones in my finger to hold them in place while they healed. And I've had my fair share of medical procedures. I've had several surgeries. I've worked in hospitals, and I'm usually fascinated by medicine. I'm not usually freaked out by what happens to my body. I'm the weird person who, when she gives blood, watches the tech put the needle in my arm. I don't look away. I don't mind a little bit of pain, and I've lived through my fair share. But I was really afraid about that surgery to fix my finger. More clearly, I was afraid of the pain that I knew would come after. I can trace some of my fear to a surgery that I observed while working as a chaplain in seminary. It was an orthopedic surgery. A guy had been in a car accident years before and had broken his leg, and much like me, had needed screws and a plate for his leg to heal. And then that got infected, and the surgery was to remove the screws and the plate. At the time, I thought the surgery was cool. And even as I'm in the operating room and the nurses and the doctors keep telling me, well, if you feel lightheaded, you should back up to the wall and then sit down on the floor, I'm like, nope, I'm great. Everything's cool. I was fascinated by what the doctors were doing. But when it was time to have screws put in my own bone, I thought back to that surgery. I recalled the way that the surgeon used the scalpel to cut open skin and then to peel back flesh, muscle, fat to get to the bone. And I could hear the sound of the drill as they took out the screws. I anticipated the pain that I would experience after my own surgery because I knew the trauma that my fragile bones and muscles in my finger would experience. Saying that I didn't look forward to it would be putting it mildly. And it took an immense amount of courage for me to walk into the hospital that morning. Which makes me appreciate just a little bit what Peter was going through as he entered the courtyard following Jesus in the hours leading up to Jesus' crucifixion. Only a few verses before today's reading picks up, Peter had followed Jesus with the other disciples across the Kidron Valley into a garden. But Judas, who had betrayed him, also knew the place because Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas brought a detachment of soldiers together with the police of the chief priests and the Pharisees, and they came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Peter went from enjoying the serene evening with Jesus and his fellow disciples in the garden to being threatened by soldiers carrying lanterns, torches, and weapons. Soldiers and police, it should be noted, who were just following orders, having been sent there with Judas to bring Jesus in. But they came with lanterns and torches and weapons. And even though Jesus willingly gave himself over, Peter's fear prompted him to draw the sword that he had on him. And Peter struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. Peter's desire to protect Jesus seems commendable. But Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that my Father has given me?" So the soldiers, their officer, and the Jewish police arrested Jesus and bound him. Which is where our reading for this morning picks up. Peter, who had just witnessed Jesus arrested by soldiers and police, Peter, who was fearful enough of what may happen that he drew a sword and cuts off a guy's ear, Peter, who by this point has likely already heard that John the Baptist has been arrested and beheaded because he continued to preach about Jesus. Peter follows Jesus with another disciple to the gate of the courtyard of the high priest. Since that disciple, the other disciple with Peter, was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter was standing outside at the gate. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out, spoke to the woman who guarded the gate, and brought Peter in. The woman said to Peter, "You are also not one of this man's disciples, are you?" Peter stands there, alone with the other disciple, facing a guard and a whole community, likely following the orders of the empire, having to answer a question that could potentially end his life, having to choose to tell the truth or to hide in a lie, having to risk it all or hoping to be mistaken for somebody else. And it is in this moment that I sympathize with Peter. I think back to the surgical prep area, watching the nurse as they wrote on my arm, "Yes" on my right arm, "No" on my left arm, big giant X, so they got that right. And they begin to recall the sound of the drill and imagine the little screws going into my bone. I remember my anxiety starting to creep up and my desire to say, "No, I'd rather not do this," even though the thought of my finger healing at a 45-degree angle was not pleasant either. And I can only imagine what it would be like for Peter to be standing in that courtyard, the territory of someone who potentially had the power to get him killed if he answered incorrectly, and to be questioned by the woman guarding the gate, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Peter took temporary refuge from his fear in a lie. Fear is something that we all live with. Some of us have had to face decisions much like Peter, having to choose to do the right thing, maybe while working for a company that has asked us to oppress or hurt others for the sake of profit. We must face the choice to betray our fear and do what is right, or to be complicit in that order and not risk losing our livelihood, the job that pays for our food and the place we sleep at night. Many women, some men, particularly those who have voiced the Me Too to the world, have feared what a date, a boss, or another man in their lives would do to them if they didn't put up with the sexual innuendos or allow for unwanted touch or even coerced sex. Some of us, and maybe more of us than we realize, fear losing the privilege that makes our lives easier, never having been demeaned, devalued, or dehumanized because of the color of our skin or our gender. Fear is a powerful motivator, even if it lies just under the surface of things and we don't realize that it's there. I'm sure that Peter, though, realized his fear that night, standing in the courtyard behind the gate, unable to escape what may come if he had said yes. "I am one of his disciples." And so he says, "I am not." And then he doesn't just say it once, he doubles down and then he triples down on that lie. "I am not. I am not." At this point, all that Peter can see is the danger of the situation and his own fear. But that's not all that Jesus sees. Slid into the narrative in between Peter's first denial and then his second and third is Jesus being questioned by the high priest. Then the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. I've said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard what I said to them. They know what I said." For all of Peter's lies about who he is, even for Judas's betrayal, sorry, Jesus still doesn't give up on them. I've spoken openly to the world, he says. I have said nothing in secret. I have shown you who I am, and I will not hide, Jesus says, even when I know my life is on the line. Peter can only see his fear. Jesus can only see his love. Love that will go willingly into pain, torture, and even death for the ones he loves. Love that is only able to speak the truth. Love that does not hide, but is always out in the open. Love that is not a temporary hiding place, but instead a refuge from the storm. Love that makes the shepherd guard the sheep with his own life. We started this season of Lent on Ash Wednesday with the reading from John 10, where Jesus proclaims that he is the gate, the gatekeeper, and the shepherd of the sheep. Make up your mind, Jesus. The sheep know his voice, he says, and do not pay attention to the voices of others. John uses that same language here in 18. The words for gate and courtyard here are the same words that are used for gate and sheepfold in John 10. As one commentator says, there Jesus both enters by the gate and is the gate himself. Now, in the fold of the high priest, Jesus, the shepherd gate, is laying down his life in order to take it up again. Later, it will be clear to Peter, and we as Jesus' sheep might also come to see, that every gate leads to him, and every courtyard is his. And even if we close ourselves away behind locked doors from the dangers of the world, Jesus will come to us there. Our fear does not have the last word. Instead, Jesus does. The one who does not give up on us. The one who lays down his life for us. The one who teaches us how to love, and maybe more importantly, how to be loved. The one who comes to us, even in the midst of the dangers of the world, to be with us and to remind us that love has the final say. Always. Time and time again.